Hello, everybody. Welcome to this concurrent session about ensuring the home energy revolution. So the presentation here has been prepared by three members from Finity Consulting, one of whom unfortunately is not able to be here today, but I will introduce them and I think they'll give a wave. So Saranjit Padam, probably well known to most of you here. So Saranjit is an actuary with nearly 30 years experience in the UK and Australia and is a senior executive at Global General Insurers. He advises insurers, banks, investors, asset owners and governments on climate risk assessment, management, strategy and reporting. He has won numerous awards, including as the Joint Actuary of the Year in 2023 by the Actuaries Institute, and it was shared with Raed Muslin, his colleague in the Climate and Natural Perils Practice at Finity. The second author who is co-presenting today is Vicky Mullen. Vicky is a senior consultant at Finity. She is a lawyer with 30 years' experience in public policy and financial services. She has worked for... It's an amazing bio that Vicky has. So she has worked for two large insurers, held senior roles with the Insurance Council of Australia, the Financial Services Council, and the Actuaries Institute. She has also worked for nearly 3 years as an ombudsman with the Australian Financial Complaints Authority. And in an earlier career, she worked extensively with government, including roles in the High Court of Australia and in the New South Wales Parliament. Vicky provides services in regulatory affairs and strategic reviews at Finity. And the third author who is unable to join us is Dominique Thorne. He is a consultant at Finity Consulting. He is a climate scientist with experience working across academia, consulting and policy. He spent much of his working life in New Zealand, where he worked on the climate policy team at the Ministry for the Environment. And one of his roles there, I understand, was as New Zealand's national focal point to the International Panel on Climate Change. At Finity, Dom supports a range of clients with climate scenario analysis, climate risk assessments and research. So an amazing author team with diversity of skills, and they're bringing it together to explain ensuring the home energy revolution.
Okay, this is good. It's labelled, so I know how to work it, which is great. Good afternoon. My name is Vicky Mullen. I'm really pleased to be here with you this afternoon. As Vanessa has outlined, we're here to, I guess, bring collectively our insights into where we're going with home insurance in the midst of a whole lot of really interesting developments with home energy. I just wanted to call out Dom because, as I understand it, Dom did do a lot of work for Rewiring New Zealand. And the beautiful graphic we've got up here is from a whole lot of really great work that Rewiring Australia does. I think it's a not-for-profit, but it's a beautiful graph and it really well illustrates what is actually going on and why we're here today to talk about this. I'll just go to the next slide. Oh, I'll just click on this. Not working. Help! I need my tech expert. There we go. Thank you. Thanks, Saranjit. So what are we talking about? What's actually going on? So I'm sure many of you have heard an awful lot about the uptake of solar panels on homes. Some of you may also be, hi, Alison. Some of you may also be installing home batteries, but there's a really interesting underlying development happening in the Australian energy market. And a recent draft report released by the Australian Energy Market Operator has for the first time called out that home energy systems will need to be brought online into the whole energy system for Australia. Why? The main reason was a couple of reasons why. Firstly, the poles and wires infrastructure is becoming incredibly expensive. So the cost of continuing to build out the really big infrastructure is just becoming too expensive. The second dynamic is that every time they want to put a big pole up or some wires somewhere, they have to negotiate that through the community, and there's a little bit of NIMBYism happening as well. So AEMO has actually done some really good assessment. It's consulted with all the various groups and people, and it's started to form the view that the only way it's going to bring the strength and the viability into the national energy market is to actually bring home energy systems online and create the infrastructure so that home energy systems can connect into that system And that's going to strengthen it and give it some really, really great sustainability over time. So there's a reference there to that report if you want to have a look at it. And the feedback that is happening in this space will then flow into the integrated system plan that AEMO will release in 2026. So there's an awful lot going on. We've got a nice little video here to demonstrate. I'll just, hopefully there's some music playing as well. Hands up, who has solar panels and a home battery? Anybody? Okay, so that's about 25%. So that just demonstrates we're there. We've got a long way to go, but we've really gone a long way already to execute what you've just seen there. Might need some help with this again to get to the next slide. Sharanjit knows how terrible I am with tech. Ah, thank you. We've glitched out on the video. While he's doing that, I'm going to step you through. And Sharanjit, you may as well stay here because you've got the next slides. What we're really interested to do, a lot of the work that we do at Finity is with climate scenario analysis. And one of the big conversations we're having, thank you, with our clients, is around the climate risks, obviously, but also the climate opportunities. And as Vanessa mentioned, I spent a couple of years as an AFCA ombudsman. I have read way too many home insurance policies in detail. And one of the things that really strikes me with retail insurance policies is that they evolve organically, and insurers tend to sort of bolt tiny terms and conditions in. And I think what we're asking insurers and their professional advisors, including actuaries in the work that you do, is to really go back to basics. When you're thinking about the home energy revolution, go back to the basics of the risks that you're covering, the terms and conditions of the cover, and the exclusions that will apply. And I'll come back to that a little bit later on in the presentation. But I think what we're trying to say is there's an enormous opportunity here for insurers to develop products for home householders that are really fit for purpose for this home energy revolution. And with that, I'll pass over to Sharanjit, who's going to step you through some really interesting data points around what's actually going on. Thank you.
Thanks, Sharanjit. Thanks, Vicky. So as Vicky says, a lot of the inspiration for what we're doing here is coming out of the work we're doing with our clients on climate scenario analysis, where we take them through potential future worlds, show them videos like that one, and sort of start to help them understand and unpack what might be the risks and opportunities that are coming. And one of the observations we have is that insurers are very good at spotting all the risks. They're not so great at spotting the opportunities, right? And that I think we have a lot deeper understanding of where the risks are. But the fact is that there are a huge number of opportunities. And on top of that, you know, even when we look at many of the, you know, reputable economic projections for what transition may mean for Australia, it's a very positive story. It's not, everyone talks about the cost of getting to net zero, but actually most analyses will show you that it's actually really good for our economy, that there are huge opportunities for Australia and for Australia to prosper in these types of worlds. So, you know, I guess part of this was, well, maybe we should try and think of some opportunities as well, and instead of just pushing it all onto our clients. So that's some of what we're talking about here. Now, when we do these climate scenario analyses, one of the things you have to have in your scenarios is that they have to be plausible. So we've just presented you with a scenario, and I guess what I'm going to go through now is why we think this is a plausible scenario and the data points behind that. So as Vicky says, you know, the home electrification revolution is already underway. 80%. So this, the first one comes from AEMO's step change scenario. You know, and in that they have 80% of freestanding homes have rooftop solar by 2050. And that's, you know, up from around 30% today. CSIRO have done their own scenarios and projections, and they're talking about 60% of homes with solar will also have home batteries by 2050. And so, you know, we think the take up of batteries and solar is almost inevitable in the way that's going to happen to those levels. But there's even more than that. There's good reason to think that even if we take those projections from AEMO and CSIRO, that they're underestimating what's actually happening out there, because historically, as you can see on what I think is becoming a famous graph on the right, that you know, we've significantly underestimated the take-up of renewable energy. And even the people who are best at doing this, the IEA, have massively underestimated all the time. Now, there's probably good reason for that. We think that they haven't put the cost curves in, and the cost curves are doing things that even people, the learning rates are doing things that people just didn't think were possible, right? So the learning rates are as technology grows over time, the cost comes down. And for many of the projections around the economic impacts, the really big assumption is what's the learning curve you've put into that model, right? And we've just underestimated how far down those learning curves have gone. And all the regulators continue to do this. And the other part to this is the kind of economic incentive of this, that the savings of installing solar and batteries are starting to become much more apparent and will become more apparent as we go forward. And so that demand side, I think, has been underestimated by many of the projectors. Solar panels, electric vehicles, and home batteries are becoming more affordable. So this is, I guess, another way of looking at what I was talking about. The learning rates are for solar panels. You can see some of those curves on the right there. And also for batteries are coming back much faster than people thought and much further down. We've got this wonderful point here. I remember where the costs went up of batteries in just post the GFC because of all the supply chain issues and inflationary costs we saw there. And then all the kind of naysayers out there kept pointing this out. So battery powers are going up, right? And this is a beautiful example of cherry picking where they show these two points here, but they don't show the rest of that curve. And, you know, it's part of the misinformation that always goes around. But like I said, the economic and environmental, and it's essentially a smart decision from an economic and environmental basis to go electrify and to go and think about electricity from use of solar. This is some work, again, I think this is the one. Yeah, this is the kind of the Rewiring Australia work that Vicky referred to that's been done by Rewiring Australia. And what they've done is estimated the benefits of electrification of homes. And you can see here, we're talking about up to $5,000, I believe, per year in terms of electrifying your house. And so that those numbers are also increasing over time. And are expected to increase over time. So that the kind of trade-off decision, if you ever see an actuary buying, like solar for their roof or battery for the house, it involves a incredible number of spreadsheets, obviously. Those spreadsheets are starting to pump out really good numbers right now for everyone who's doing them. Yes. And so we think the AMO have undercooked it. And we think that actually it's not going to be 80%. It's going to be 100% of houses will be virtually every house. And we'll see the benefits of these factors, which will drive things, and that we'll get to 100% electricity, which is kind of the forecast that we're looking at here. So those are my why you should believe me points. Hopefully they've been effective. But if that does happen, then, the world will look different. And particularly from a home insurance perspective, we will have a lot more, the way that our houses interact. They won't just be places we live. They will be sources of our energy. They will be, sources of revenue and financial, returns. They will be a lot more interdependency in that, you can things like community batteries and those types of systems happening. It's like many changes, I think it's subtle how that will change. We can easily take it for granted. There's a real positive story here about how it can drive cost of living savings. And it can, as Vicky outlined in the beginning, remove the need for large scale investment in transmission and distribution, which, is becoming the biggest block to us achieving that. We wrote this presentation before the election, and then the election happened, and now, the government is coming out with an incentive scheme for home batteries. So that's, another data point that you should throw in there. In fact, I just got solar, and I told them I wasn't going to buy a battery because I was going to wait till after the election, and then buy it after the election. And the guy looked at me because he didn't really understand the policies, and then I explained, and that's why we're doing it. So my house now has the whole thing. Easy to have as a slot for the battery to go in. Two batteries actually, but there's nothing in there at the moment waiting for the 1st of July. So that's the good news side. But there are going to be, so you have to say, as an insurance enterprise, like, we have to spot where are all the risks. Like, what are the new risks? What will people want to have insured, right? Now, the starting point of this, though, for me, is that, you know, every house in this scenario has like $30,000 worth of extra stuff on it, right? That's $30,000 across every house in Australia that needs to be insured. That in itself, as a starting point, is a big growth for the home insurance market in Australia, right? That will cause a significant increase in the premium income that we will get from home insurance market, just that on its own, right? But there are other things. So one of the consequences of houses becoming self-sufficient and energy powerhouses is that people will only use the grid when they really need to. And there's this phenomena called the spiral, downward spiral that we'll get in the distributed energy place, where fewer and fewer people are buying lots of electricity off the grid, but you have all those fixed costs. And so the prices of energy goes up, and then more and more people are incentivized to switch, and then the price, then they got less things. So we end up with these spirals, very typical. Health insurance is going through its version of that. And those kinds of things happen, right? So the big risk you have as a homeowner in this world is that your energy system, for whatever reason, fails, and you have to start buying electricity off the grid, right? And that, we think, will be expensive and may even be more than, under certain scenarios, what you have to fix on your house from an event, say. And so we were looking at this and thinking, oh, this is an opportunity for insurers to step in, to transfer away this risk for homeowners. And to add it on to your home insurance policies, right? That this is a significant cost that homeowners may face. Hailstorm comes down, destroys your solar panels. Not only are you having to replace those, but you're going to have to replace all the energy. It's going to take you a couple of weeks of being on grid power. That could be a lot of money, right? And so there's a product in here. Some insurers have started to think about this. We did see a few insurers putting some kind of things on this. Most of what's being done at the moment is like a certain, like, well, they'll give you $200 to cover extra energy costs. But, you know, there's better ways to price this. You could price for the actual indemnity amount, which will be much more interesting. Vicky, the other title for this presentation was a climate scientist, a lawyer, and an actuary walk into a bar.
Yeah, that's it.
And so this is the lawyer.
The down arrow?
You can use that big button there.
Oh, the big button. Thank you. I like the big button. Thanks, Sharanjit. What I'm going to do, yes, I'm the lawyer. I'm going to step you through now, ask you to imagine home insurance policy of the future. And what I'm going to do is step you through some of the scope of what that might look like, some of the potential terms that might need to stay the same, some of the things that you might need to think about that might need to change. And then I'm going to actually step through what it might look like going through an actual claim, and then what it might look like from a repairs perspective, because that also raises some really interesting issues for an integrated home energy system as well. So just to step you through some of the things that we're thinking about, again, bearing in mind that these systems are meant to be integrated. They're not actually necessarily being treated that way currently under home insurance policies, but they will be very much seen as integrated systems between the panels, the inverter, the battery, the chargers, the EV in the garage, the whole system. An interesting point there is that energy can flow both ways. So while these systems might be powering the home independently, they can also possibly be designed so they actually put energy into the grid. And one of the interesting dynamics with the subsidies for home batteries, I think this news just dropped a couple of days ago, the New South Wales subsidy system is finishing on 30 June because the federal government subsidy system is kicking in on 1 July. They were meant to be stacked, but the New South Wales government has pulled back. But what is happening is that the New South Wales government has said it's going to divert the funding that it was going to use to subsidise batteries into the development of virtual power networks between a small cluster of homes and small businesses. So I think if I understand it correctly, the idea is that these clusters can actually feed excess energy into the grid. So energy is going to be flowing both ways. So the supply-demand kind of dynamics gets really interesting and what that means for insurance. Just an extra point there, an electric insurance policy would cover both the home and possibly also the vehicle when it's plugged in the garage, something to think about. I'll just keep moving through. The point there that this would be a meaningful use of insurance companies' sphere of influence, using their influence over household decisions to incentivise the uptake of zero emissions technologies. And that goes to our point that homeowners, as they move on this journey, will really be looking for fit-for-purpose insurance. I'll just keep going. So when we look at the scope of cover, some things clearly need to remain the same. Insurance is still required for the cost to repair the physical damage to the home, including the home energy system. Key insured events such as storm, including hail, lightning, bushfire, flood, impact, malicious damage, need to stay. Accidental damage should remain available as an optional cover. And further benefits such as temporary accommodation if the home is uninhabitable due to damage caused by an insured risk, including damage caused to the home energy system. Scope of cover, some things may need to change. So one of the key questions I'd pose to this audience is whether a home energy system should be clearly defined and specifically covered by the home policy as an asset in its own right within that policy. And I'll get to an advocate determination at the end of this presentation. I'll demonstrate to you why that's actually a really critical point to bear in mind. Another interesting question, again, during the time I worked as an ombudsman, I dealt with many complaints where there was a dispute between the insurer and the policyholder around what information was disclosed on policy inception or renewal. So again, a critical question for insurers is, in terms of home energy systems, what kinds of questions are you asking your consumers on policy inception or renewal? Bearing in mind that in a 12-month period from when the policy was first taken out, a home energy system could have been installed. So on renewal, you've got a $30,000 asset now on that home that maybe wasn't there 6 months ago. What will the sum insured be? I think it's no longer good enough to just say home on the main street in Lismore, the replacement cost of that home based on realestate.com is about $800,000. That probably doesn't cut it. You probably need to specifically consider an uplift in the sum insured specifically to cover the home energy system. And should there be a separate sum insured for that system? These are all things that I think you should think about. Should the sum insured cover the total replacement cost of a new efficient system, so new for old, or do you have a depreciation schedule and say that home energy system's been in place for 7 years? It costs $30,000, but it's really only worth $10,000. These are all things that will flow into the risk calculation and the pricing. There will be some new and material risks. So as Sharanjit has mentioned, one of the key risks for a householder is if they've got this integrated home energy system, which is giving them free and independent energy, if that system goes down and their home becomes uninhabitable for a period of, say, possibly up to 6 months, they may have to source energy from somewhere else. And because of the impact with the grid, the actual daily cost of electricity could significantly spike. So that could be a significant financial impost on a householder. We predict that the cost of accessing expert and qualified technicians and repairers is going to spike. We understand there's clearly not enough. There just aren't enough electricians today. There's going to be enormous demand on electricians as people uptake solar panels and batteries, because you must have an electrician to do the wiring. You cannot have an installation done by someone who's not qualified. Have a think about third-party risks. So if we've got virtual power networks, if one party in that network goes down for whatever reason and has a flow-through effect, there could be third-party risks. And there's probably a whole bunch of other risks that we haven't even thought about. So what I want to do now is go to the actual process of making a claim. And if you can imagine, as Sharanjit mentioned, someone has an integrated home energy system and there's a major hailstorm. Who does the damage assessment and the MagSafe? Can you throw a tradie in steel cap boots up onto the roof to make safe a very complicated electrical system, I suggest probably not. So you're probably going to have the electrician doing the immediate MagSafe. Should the policy provide, I'll get to another one. The actual claims assessment and decision process itself needs expert assessment because it's a very complicated and integrated system. Another thing to think about is how do current standard policy exclusions apply? For example, how does wear and tear apply if solar panels have pre-existing but minor hail damage? What does that mean? Does that mean you can apply that exclusion? Or if it landed on an ombudsman desk, would they say that's not fair and reasonable? You have to actually pay for the damage that was caused by the event. Do you cash settle or repair? If a home energy system damage claim is cash settled, how do you determine the amount? These are all important questions for handling a claim. Then we get to the point of if an insurer accepts a claim and they exercise their discretion to actually repair that system, all sorts of issues about the need to source qualified technicians, the possibility, as you do with smash repair networks for motor insurance claims, insurers probably should start thinking now about the development of energy system repair networks, your supply chains for labour and parts and parts of the system, industry support for training and education of home energy system technicians. And an interesting one for me is if you had a situation where a home was substantially damaged by a hailstorm, so the roof itself has been damaged, the home energy system is not working and it's been smashed to pieces, how do you coordinate the builder, the plumber, the roofer, the electrician, the suppliers, because they are all on site at the same time? And that's a complex repair ecosystem in its own right of getting all those tradies, if you can call them that, to make sure they're all working together to repair that home. How do you prepare for a scaled response? For example, if the 1999 Sydney hailstorm were to come across Sydney in 2035, where nearly every single home has got a home energy system. Imagine that. And I have got a very clear memory of that hailstorm. Memories of hundreds and hundreds of homes through the inner east of Sydney being without roofs for months and being tarped. And that was just the roof. So imagine if all the home energy systems go down. We're not painting a very positive picture here. But anyway, so just to scare your pants off, here we go. So just some things to, as I mentioned, just imagine if the hailstorm did go across Sydney in 2035, but to the same extent. My understanding is that if that hailstorm were to occur now, the current cost of the damage would be about $9.5 billion. So add in home energy security systems into that total figure and it's a big sum. I won't go through this scenario, but you can imagine based on what I've already been stepping through. Okay. I just wanted to finish off my part of the presentation by referring to a recent determination that was made by the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, and it really piqued our interest because this covered a claim that was made, excuse me, I'm losing my voice, by a householder where their home energy system was damaged. And I won't go through the details of it, but except to say that the claim got right down into the weeds of the terms and conditions that applied to optional accidental cover. And what I mean by that is that there were, under that particular insured event of accidental damage, so the Ombudsman found there was a valid claim, there was accidental damage, so it wasn't an insured event, a natural peril, it was accidental damage because they couldn't determine that the actual damage to the generator was caused by lightning or hail, but something had gone wrong. So it met the definition of accidental damage under the policy. The insurer tried to rely on two exclusions. The Ombudsman found that neither of those exclusions applied. And one in particular that was interesting was an exclusion that basically said the insurer can rely on the exclusion except for a situation where if one part of one thing was damaged and it caused resultant damage to other assets. And it was on the basis of that exclusion that the Ombudsman said the damage to the generator is not covered, but the resultant damage to the two inverters was covered. So what I'm trying to suggest is please, please go to your home insurance PDSs and stress test them against the Sydney hailstorm scenario and imagine how that policy would respond under all of the insured events, including accidental cover, accidental damage, because you might find some sleeping risks there that can be quite costly. The householder in this particular situation made a claim for $80,000. We're not quite sure what the insurer had to pay because the ombudsman said, go back to the chalkboard and work it out, but you're on risk and you have to pay the damage for the damage to the two inverters in that system. Now, I go back to my point about I would strongly encourage insurers to insert a definition into a home insurance policy, a definition of the system, and make a decision as to whether you're covering the whole system or whether you want to chunk it down into bits. Because if you don't do that, you might get a nasty surprise with a decision like this. So, again, it's just something to think about, a very strong suggestion to go back to the basics of your policies and really stress test them under some scenarios and see how they might respond when a claim is actually made and what that might look like in terms of handling the claim and then possibly trying to repair the damage under the policy. I think that's it from me. I think back to you, Sharanjit. Thank you. Sorry to be so scary.
I think that's one of the paradoxes you get into that, you know, increasing risk is actually an opportunity for insurers, right? Increasing risk means there's more demand for risk transfer, there's more issues. And so some of these things, yes, we get all these advantages of electrification of homes, but we also get the risks, but that's not a bad thing for insurers, right? Like I said, I'm the token actuary on this presentation. And so, you know, here's my one actuarial slide about how we're going to price this stuff. I think, you know, there's a lot of challenges here, right? But there will be an absence of historical loss information. You won't be able to go and say, okay, well, what was the average loss ratio and figure things out like that. But I think there's a bit more to that as well because, I didn't think of this until yesterday when we had that first presentation where they talked about, a lot of about what happens on a claim is actually behavioral. It depends how people behave in those circumstances, right? That they don't always claim everything or they try to claim more things than they should. And that flows into pricing over the longer term. And, you know, and we know this problem particularly well in things like workers' comp, where, you know, 90% of a claim outcome is usually a behavioral issue, right? And it's nothing to do with which bit of the body was hurt. So I think that's going to be the really hard bit of this to price, to see how are people going to behave when their electricity systems go down? And, you know, will that mean will we get larger claims? Will we get smaller claims? Will people be, will people do the maintenance of their roof a lot more because they now have solar panels on them or less, right? So, you know, one of the big issues that we have with just normal buildings and storm claims is that people don't maintain their roofs and we get into trouble, right? So those are going to be the really hard things to think about pricing because of the behavioral change that we will expect to get. Like, you know, I'm now one of those dads who has an app on his phone for how much his solar power is getting, you know, and those dads' behavioral changes. Like they want to go and talk to you about that all the time, right? At parties. And it's really, really boring, right? But now I'm one of them, right? So come and see you in the break. I can show you how much solar power I'm getting today. But yeah, it's actually really, sorry, I'm going to stick on this line. Like I now have a financial incentive on what the weather is like in Sydney. Like before I never used to care, but now if it's raining, I'm like, oh no, I'm losing money. Like, you know, so anyway, there you go. There's also some interesting interactions of risks that we got to think about, right? So in a vehicle to grid type situation where your battery for your house is actually your car battery or an additional battery, and say you have a car accident, so you can no longer use the battery on your house, right? Because your car is actually part of your home energy system. That will be interesting because then you would trigger a claim under this kind of insurance policy because you have to connect to the grid rather than using the battery. And it's not because of what's hit the house, but what hit your car. I think in the past, insurers have tried to do product innovation by bundling home and motor cover and a whole sequence of bundled type covers. Hasn't been very successful generally. This might make that kind of approach much more successful because your energy system now is in two pieces, one that's static on your house and one that's running around the roads, taking people. So that make you, you know, you have to think about that. And you also have to think about that interaction in terms of pricing, because suddenly motor risk affects your home insurance policy. But this is all possible. So I'm not sure how many of you saw Scott's presentation yesterday, where he was talking about the different types of batteries and the work that I know Munich Re have done a lot in understanding failure rates for different type of batteries, because they provide a product which is a warranty on that. It's very interesting from a pricing perspective, because they haven't got lots of claims, but they have got this really good engineering data about how these things actually work and failure rates, and they've turned that into pricing, right? And I think we're going to have to do a lot more of that type of thing. For example, you need to understand energy usage, because you need to price how much the people are going to use on the grids. Smart meter data is going to be available. We're going to have a lot more telematics embodied in these houses through all these devices that are connected. That data will be very useful. So, I can imagine the actuary in 2035 saying, give me access to your energy use smart code. We will have a consumer data right for my energy use, so my smart meter. I would give my insurer that code. They would go and access my energy use through that and do the telematics and price my product based on my energy use, because that's what they are insuring. I do think this thing will mean a change for us as well, and we will have to use other ways of pricing information. But I do want to, I guess my last point here is that, there are a lot of risks in climate change, but there are huge opportunities. One thing I've become obsessed with, through my career as an actuary is the house, and just, how many ways our home has changed what it means. It's not just a place to live. A home determines our social outcomes. It determines our health outcomes. It determines our financial outcomes. It's often our biggest asset. It often determines how people vote. So it determines people's political outcomes. And now home is now going to be going to have energy thrown on top of it as well. And, I think one thing we do as actuaries are enable people to prosper and have homes and have wealth and have safety. And the home is kind of the picture for that for me. So I'm excited by this. I hope you are too. Thank you.
Thank you, Saranjit and Vicky. You have made it real. Hopefully not just scary, but also opportunities. So there are a few questions coming through. I'm going to go, I think we've got 5 minutes or even only four. So the first one, I'm not sure who will take questions, so you can work it out. Does a new energy system make a home more vulnerable to natural catastrophes? EVs and solar batteries bring new risks for bushfire and flood. For example, EVs don't like being submerged in flood, and they can lead to house fires. How should we tackle this additional risk aggregation?
What's the first part of that question again?
I think it's the combination of natural catastrophes with an electrified home. So here is an example, the battery in the water. I don't know how that leads to a fire, but it flow on consequences adverse to the home.
Yes. This is where we as actuaries, really can get into this, because there's nuance here and there's real lack of information out there. And someone understanding what are actual risks and what not actual risks are really important. So, IAG have just put out a paper saying there are like battery fires from EVs is not a real thing. Right. And that's based on lots of research. And it's actually not surprising if you think about just how much engineering and development has gone into these things, how many safety standards are applied, all those things, mean that these are not dangerous products inherently, right? They are very safe products. Actually, you can leave a battery underwater. It's fine. It's designed to be waterproof, an EV battery. You leave it for a couple of months, then yes, it will corrode and break. Like there are thresholds for everything, but that's not usually the situation we're thinking about in a flood scenario. There are other things though, because, I don't think having an EV or a battery in your house is going to make it more vulnerable to fires. But if a fire does happen, then EV batteries in the middle of fire is a problem, right? There's dangerous gases that come out. They're harder to put out, and they're a problem from that perspective. But the other thing we have to think about here is,
that house is no longer connected to a gas network, doesn't have gas, big bottles of gas strapped to the outside of the building, which will blow up in a wildfire institute. So yes, sure, let's look at the risk, but let's look at the nuance here. The risk is actually coming down because there's no more gas to that house, right? And you're going to have to think through these scenarios and understand that, because there's a lot of misinformation out there about what are real risks and what are not real risks.
Do you want, Alan, do you want to go to the microphone? Because transcripts will be made available.
Just a quick personal anecdote to back up exactly what Sharanjit said. When I drove my electric vehicle through about probably 50 centimetres of water 12 years ago, it needed to go to maintenance to be fixed. But they said if I'd driven an ICE through it, it would have been damaged beyond repair. So
exactly.
It was absolutely fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. There's also a couple of, I think they're actually comments, which I'll share. So in 2035, might it be practical for an insurer to supply electricity via a mobile battery rather than pay for expensive grid power? Just thinking through the alternatives of solutions. And another one is grid batteries will also have a big part to play, as many homes and apartments, as many homes are apartments and can't get solar. Another one for smart homes. So a question, and the Internet of Things, should insurance add on cyber cover, or how does that work?
Yeah. I think the answer is yes. And then you need to price for it, etc. I think actually there's a lot of silent cyber cover in home insurance. Like, right. Noticing Alison nod ahead there, because the way that some of those definitions of home insurance are written, you could probably interpret them that you are already covered for cyber and you're paying out in it. So I think this is another thing where we do need to do this clarification of what's covered or not covered. Absolutely, cyber will be part of the risk that people face, and we should be able to price and insure that.
So as a proactive proactive solution might be to seek an AFCA ruling on a hypothetical case, for example, to provide clarity. I don't, I put that out there as an idea. Another question, do you know overall how far along the journey the insurance market is in Australia and or overseas in thinking about the home energy revolution and reflecting this in product design or claims management?
I'd explain it as a tiny toe in the water, and that's about as far as it's gone. You've got a lot of work to do.
And overseas?
Look, I've done lots of Google searching on multiple occasions, hoping that something might pop up, for example, in Northern Europe, and I cannot find anything really that of real substance that gives us some, like a light on the hill to aim for. So maybe Australia could be the first that does this really well.
Anybody here from Suncorp? Yeah. So you guys actually do provide an optional cover for this already. For energy loss. There's the only one. That's the little toe in the water. Suncorp are looking at this, which I think is great. And we do need more people thinking like that.
Wonderful. And a last question is about insurance affordability, which we know is already an issue. Any comments on what electrification might mean for that, solutions?
Remove cascading taxes, and then over to you.
Yeah, down with ESL. Look, I think this is going to be an interesting issue, right? Because we are potentially going to have many more assets and a higher sum insured for homes, and that will flow through to higher insurance costs. I think one of the things here, though, is if insurers do this right, policyholders won't be surprised. Like, it's part of the unaffordability is as well people's perspective of what they should be paying for insurance, right? But if you're suddenly saying, oh, well, actually what we're doing here is we're charging you a little bit extra in home insurance, but we're covering you for this really important asset, then I think that's a much easier sell and won't be as problematic to the market. It's also an interesting thing, like, we're trying to get the data to do this at some point, is, look at overlay. So we've got data on which houses are solar or not, and trying to overlay that on our insurance affordability analysis and just see who might be caught by this or not caught by this. I think it's very interesting, but I actually don't think it's going to be as big a problem, because I think what consumers resent is where they think they're paying for something that they're not getting. And if you're saying, well, actually, you are getting extra cover for these important things, mm-hmm. then I don't think consumers will be so anti it. Sorry, but while I'm on that comment, before you really, you bring consumers, one thing as well, I think, like, you know, the first talk we opened, the first plenary opened this conference was great. And one of the things we also have to think behind all of this is, what are consumers' expectations about what a home insurance should be covering in terms of the energy system? And, you know, how well are we doing in meeting that social license and meeting what policyholders might reasonably expect insurers to do in these circumstances? Don't think we've thought about that enough.
Very good point. Vicky?
Just really quickly, a soapbox of mine, having dealt with a number of really tricky complaints where water got in through a poorly maintained roof. An opportunity for insurers could be, as people keep putting more and more things up on their roofs, to have a conversation with your policyholders about what they need to do to have a better roof. I don't know what they need to do to make sure that a roof is fit for purpose to put panel, like, you know, heavy kit on top of it. But if I could ask you to do one thing with your, the companies that you work for, see if you can find a way to create a conversation with your, customers about making sure they maintain their roof. That is your first line defence against storm damage.
And just on the insurance affordability point, I wonder though if costs are being removed elsewhere from the system, such as the transmission system, then overall society benefits. It's about the distribution of who's paying for insuring that.
Yeah.
So the overall, hopefully better.
There is a crisis in the insurance of transmissions lines. All the networks can't find insurer coverage at reasonable prices because of things like the Black Saturday bushfire, where the issue was attributed to the network. And those guys are in real problem at the moment. But that's something out there at the moment that's going to have to be a policy solution, because it's way beyond insurance at this point.
But we will leave with optimism about electrifying homes, that it is a huge opportunity, and in the insurance industry and wider fields have a great role to play. So please join me in thanking Saranjit and Vicky and Dom.
And Dom, thank you.